So here you go, this is the energy investment in making those crystal products, and this is what happens for the rest of the life of the cell. So for a crystalline product, typically 2 years worth of its generating life is used to pay back the energy that went into making it, and after that it's a net return. So for the next 28 years or however long you're going to use yourself, that's sort of free energy from via the sun. For thin film products, that's about 6 months, not 2 years. So if anyone tells you things like it never pays its energy back, who's heard that? Everyone's heard that. Everyone says that. I don't know why or where it came from. It must be the coal industry is all I can say, because it hasn't been true and for a very long time, and it's certainly not true anymore. If we then look at the markets, that's a nice system in Kakadu National Park. We sort of have been struggling as to you know how to market this stuff, how to get investment in this industry, because our energy sector is dominated by coal mining and oil drilling and you know people who can make money by doing this sort of thing and owning this part of the energy chain. And then when it came to solar, it was a bit harder for them to get their heads around how they could own this, how they could actually take charge of this technology and own it. And so what we've seen is that most of the investment in the industry has come from elsewhere. It's come from semiconductor, you know, computing companies. It's come from, science-based groups of people. A whole range of other people have got interested in this technology. Energy companies have come and gone over the years and put in investment and then moved away from it because it just didn't fit the way they normally do business. There are a few of them still in there, but not many. Most of them have exited. And so we ended up with an industry that's owned entirely separately from the traditional energy industry and controlled and operated by other types of companies. So why do people want to invest in this industry? What have they been wanting to do? Why have governments supported PV in many, many countries? Energy security is always probably top on any government priority list as to why it would support it, particularly in countries that haven't got fossil fuel resources, such as Japan and Germany, which have been two of the biggest supporters of photovoltaics and other renewables. Energy security is a key aspect. They want self-reliance. They want to use technology that's reliable, that they don't have to buy the energy for. Industry development, a very close second in terms of the reasons why government will support it. And in many countries, there's been quite significant support for manufacturing and for market development. Greenhouse gas reduction is a new and growing reason to support it, but it hasn't until the last really 5 to 10 years been a key driver, but it is now. Production as a result of a lot of support, either in manufacturing or in the market development or both, production is spread around the world. Different technologies sort of having niches in different countries. The US supporting thin film products quite heavily, and probably that little wedge for the US will improve in the next few years. But we had the market originally dominated by Japan, and then Germany taking over a bit, and now China entering very strongly, but other countries as well. Australia's just exited because BP Solar closed its plant in March this year, so we now have no manufacturing. Very sad. So what's the market done? And I'm pleased to say we're talking gigawatts. 15 gigawatts, or there, probably more now, at the end of last year, about 15 gigawatts installed capacity of PV around the world. About 6 installed last year, between 8 and 9 expected to be installed this year, despite global financial crises and everything else that happened. Markets that were supported, like Germany, have grown tremendously. Germany alone has by now 6 or more gigawatts of installed capacity. Japan was supported sort of more consistently, but for a longer period, not this dramatic uptake, but a consistent growth. Spain did the same thing as Germany, and we'll talk about Spain in a minute. And you can see Australia there. Tiny blue line there. We look better in another graph that I'll show you, but on this graph, we don't look so good. So what sorts of measures have been used to get that type of growth happening? Capital grants have been probably the oldest type of measure and the one that the Australian governments have favoured and Japan favours. And so not a bad measure, but it has its downsides in that capital grants are always tied to budget cycles and or election cycles, and we know what that means. Whereas the last point there, feed-in tariffs can be independent of those, and that's one of the reasons why Spain and Germany have that massive uptake that's been such a driver compared to the places that have relied on grants. A lot of countries have school programs, and that's vitally important that the next generation understands PV, is familiar with it, is not worried about it, knows about it, will think about putting it in their own houses and their own businesses when they leave school. Hugely important. Renewable energy targets are another driver, another support measure. They can be generic renewable energy targets, or they can have a PV-specific component that says we will install 300 megawatts by such and such a date of either renewable energy generally or PV specifically. Building energy ratings can be used to support PV. You probably have energy efficiency ratings. Well, we can add PV into that type of rating to give you an extra star or a tick or whatever your rating mechanism is for generating your own power from green sources. And that's being used in a lot of places. Carbon pricing or emissions trading, any way you want to put a signal into the market that that you want to reduce the carbon intensity of your energy supply, puts the price of alternatives up and therefore makes PV more cost effective. So I told you Australia looks better on its own. And we have had tremendous growth in the last few years with using a grant-based mechanism. Not, again, a sustainable grant-based mechanism because it's now been stopped. So this won't look like this next year. But it has been sufficiently interesting for a lot of new installers, for a lot of our electricians to go and get their certification and so on, but not sufficiently interesting for manufacturing. I mentioned BP shutting down, and the reason for that is this has not been a long-term plan that we were told in 2000 we're going to have a 10-year PV support program and this is what it's going to do and therefore you can plan for it and invest. No, every single year along the way it was changed or modified or dependent on the budget process or the next election and so on. So there was never any certainty. Looking back, it looks like, oh, what a good program you had. But at any one time along there, we never knew what was going to happen next. And therefore, we did not get the sort of industry development and so on, manufacturing and other spin-offs that Germany has seen and Spain has seen. So we come back to feed-in tariffs, which many of you will have heard of. Feed-in tariffs are just a terminology to say that when you have excess electricity from your PV system, you can sell it back into the grid for other people to use. The feed-in tariffs that Germany and Spain have used have been for tariffs that have been offered to you. You put your PV system in now, we will pay you a tariff for your electricity for the next 20 years at this rate. Now, Germany, the rate they offered, and they started to offer, was about four times their going rate for electricity. So you can see why that uptake graph was the way it was. So if you're paying 25 cents, they were getting a dollar for the electricity they sold back. Okay, very interesting to consumers when that kind of thing was offered. And they calculated that based on the cost of the PV at the time and how much they needed to pay back the system within that 20-year period. Now, PV prices have fallen in that time, and so now the feed-in tariff is about half that, so about 50 cents. Okay, but in any 1 year, you knew when you bought your system what you were going to get paid for the next 20 years. So you had certainty in your investment, industry had certainty that this was a program that was going to keep going and they could invest and get an industry developed. And interestingly again, the feed-in tariff cost was supported by a levy across all customer categories, and not in budgets, not in the annual budgets. And so it was independent of all of that side of it, and despite politicians often not liking that because it kind of takes it out of their control and they don't like that, but you know, it provided that certainty, and the cost in Germany for the average household has been about €6 a year. And out of that, they've got that tremendous growth. They've got 6 gigawatts of PV installed. They've got 1,500 new businesses. They make 90% of the world's inverters, a third of the world's PV modules. They've got hundreds of thousands of jobs. And the German public probably thinks €6 investment a year is okay for that kind of a benefit. And so politicians now in Germany would find it difficult to can that program because there's a lot of jobs, a lot of industry tied to it. So successful feed-in tariffs, one of the key bits of the puzzle as to why the German and the Spanish programs were so useful to growing the market was that amount, that dollar and now that 50 cents was paid on the total amount of electricity that your system generated. Now in Australia we've got feed-in tariffs, but they're not even talked about. Have you heard about Australian feed-in? Not talked about. Why? Because they're net export feed-in tariffs. You're only paid the higher tariff for the amount of electricity net of your own use that you export to the grid. And for most people, having a 1 or 2 kilowatt system, that might be, I don't know, 1% of the total year's generation, 5% maybe. If you have a two-income, no-kid family and you're out all day, and you might export, say, 25%. So, you know, not the kind of driver that the 100% offered, and also not certain. Because can you tell now what your electricity usage, both in quantity and in time of day, is going to be for the next 20 years? Because that's what you need to estimate to know how much you might earn from your net export tariff over the next 20 years. And that's a much harder equation to try and work on to make an investment decision than saying everything you generate, and we know fairly accurately what your system is going to generate, and you know you can do your calculations if you're on gross. Successful tariffs also have no cap, and this is the distinction between the German and the Spanish programs, and I'll show you what happened when Spain put a cap on theirs. Essentially, caps mean that everyone tries to get in quickly. And if you want long-term industry development, you want this signal, you want the industry to develop in a mature way over time and get its infrastructure in place and so on in a reasonable way. You don't want stop-start, industry happening like that, it's not sustainable, doesn't result in what you actually want in terms of long-term development. If you have a cap, you tend to have this. Now, in most countries that have started off with a cap, they've ended up meeting that cap almost instantly. So in Austria, they met their cap in the first 15 minutes. Because everyone just rushed in. And that's the kind of thing, you know, that doesn't help you with long-term industry development, is it? And I'll show you in the next slide what happens when Spain introduces their cap. Ideally, you want it across as wide a customer group as you can, because that, one, it spreads the cost, and two, you can develop a whole range of different systems. One of the things that hasn't been good about the Australian program has been that we've targeted 1 kilowatt residential systems. So we've got all these hundreds of little 1 kilowatt residential systems. We have nothing in the multi-kilowatt, multi-megawatt scale.
Well, that's required in order to make the net payback never pay anything back.
That could be true. Except that one's a federal program, one's a state. But yeah, you know, they've kind of been giving lip service, and it's also directly related to this being an election type of an issue. And you can offer money at times of election, and the residential sector is where you can buy your votes, if you like, and other sectors are not nearly so useful for you. But if you can have this wide range of system types, you can develop your industry into a mature industry with a range of different skills and technologies and sizes, and you can bring costs down. Mm-hmm. Very hard to get costs down, really, when you're doing hundreds and hundreds of tiny little 1 kilowatt systems compared to having larger systems as well in the mix. Ideally, you want your tariff paid independently of whatever your prevailing electricity tariff is, because you don't want to muck with the competitive electricity market out there. You just want your electricity prices to do what they're doing independently of whatever your feed-in tariff does. That just sits on top of that and is independent of what happens there. Also, you need your tariff to reduce with time, and you need to know up front what that reduction is more or less going to be, but with some means of adjusting that as you go. And the reason for that is that you actually want to use this to push the prices. You want prices to go down. That's why you're using this sort of interim measure in your mix of things that you're doing to try and get new technology into your system. You want to keep putting the pressure on prices and getting them to go down. And we saw with the model in Spain, they did not do that, and the prices were way too high, and so it overstimulated the market. And then the market did that when the government decided that was they're getting way too much PV and much more than they thought. This has had ramifications not only for the Spanish market, which would be obvious, but also for the world market, because Spain was such a significant portion. Remember I said we put in about 6 megawatts last year, 6 gigawatts. Well, Spain did 2.5 of those 6, so a significant portion of the market. So when this happened on top of the global financial crisis, 2009 has been a very interesting year. And on top of this, because of this rapid market growth that we've seen before, China had a massive push into this area, and a whole lot of new manufacturing appeared on the scene as well. So we've had three really big influences on the PV market this year. And, you know, there are good things to come out of all of that to an extent as well, as we'll see. Because what we're looking for is grid parity, okay? The idea of PV-based electricity being equivalent or maybe even cheaper than grid electricity. You need to calculate it over the life of the PV you're paying up front for 20 or 30 years worth of power. So you've got to amortise that over how long you think the system's going to last, how much your interest rates are on your mortgage or however else you're financing it, and so on. But that's the idea, that when you get your cents per kilowatt hour calculation, you're getting something next to what the grid might be. And it's becoming very interesting because PV prices have gone down very, very consistently. This is the cost of average module cost of production, okay? Not price, this is the cost. And it has gone down over 30 years at a very, very consistent level. It's got what they call a learning curve of 22%, so every doubling of capacity, the price has gone down, the cost of production has gone down 22%. There's no reason to believe that's not going to continue, whether they're at the same rate or not, it doesn't matter, but given that it's still a very young industry, you know, there's a way to go in terms of cost reductions, and if you talk to any of the manufacturers, they'll tell you their long-term plans of where they're expecting to go with costs and efficiencies. And so what we saw last year was prices on average, the cost of production being about $3.5 US per watt. So modules are rated in the number of watts they produce, and prices are quoted on the international market in terms of watts. Now, the production cost was $3.5. The average international selling price was just over $4. Okay, the rest is profit for the manufacturers. But look at this one. This is one of the, this is sort of the best out there. The lowest cost manufacturers were already producing below $1.50. And so when all these three big whammies that I just mentioned hit the market, there was all this room to move in terms of the difference between that price and this cost. So if you were producing at $1.50 and selling at $4, you know, you were doing well. And there were manufacturers out there really making a killing over the last 5-10 years, okay? And when we've had all this pressure on the market with a lot of new product coming on, the market being hit by the huge reduction in the Spanish market, and finance being difficult to raise after the global financial crisis, we saw prices being pushed by these players here, and then now, because they can afford to, they've got a lot of room to move here, and prices now are $1.80 on average. Huge reduction over less than a year. Some prices as low as $1.40 on offer in the market. So you can see that these projections for 2012 of below a dollar are not unrealistic. And in fact, the thin film manufacturer First Solar was producing at $1.50 last year and was saying it would be at below a dollar by 2012. It has already reached 87 cents as of last month. So if we look at that dollar per watt cost and translate it into cents per kilowatt hour by assuming a certain amount of sun and a certain lifetime for the panels and a system cost for your inverter and so on, you can look at the details of a typical system. But you end up with current prices resulting in cost of electricity between 20 and 35 cents a kilowatt hour, and projections between sort of 12 and 27 cents a kilowatt hour. And that's not even sort of taking into account this massive drop that we've had, but this is just the long-term projection of what the industry average will do. If you translate that into New Zealand dollars and add, say, a modest 25% margin rather than the 50 or more percent margins that people have been earning, you can see that you can generate electricity 25 to 50 cents a kilowatt hour, depending on the technology and so on. But what I think will happen is that those higher cost technologies that are going to result in this fifth sense are just not going to make it in the market over the next few years. They're going to fall out because they're not going to be able to compete. And so we're going to stay with the lower end of the market. If we do that sort of thing and all of you decide tomorrow to go and put in a PV system and everyone in New Zealand does, then the grid management people need to, they're going to get a big shock. And because they haven't really built their grid to allow every householder to have their own generating system and every building in the country generating. The grid isn't designed that way. It can tolerate it for a while, and in Germany now, in Bavaria, 2% of their electricity comes from PV. So it's starting to show up on the stats. It's interesting enough for that. But once you get to sort of the 10% mark, you have to change the way you manage your grid. And so you're going to have to change your protocols or change the technology and gradually come to a whole new architecture for your grid. Okay, let's just have a bit of a look at New Zealand. And I sort of dug this out because this is the plan that you guys have of what you want to do. You want to grow your electricity use quite significantly over the next 30 years. And then I looked to see where the PV was in there, and there wasn't any. And I thought, well, I've heard of PV, or what? They're not thinking of PV. What's going to happen when grid parity arrives in 2 years' time? They're going to have a huge shock because they haven't planned for it and they don't know how they're going to deal with it. So I hope that next year's graph has got a PV wedge in there. And it'll be interesting to see what you do, and hopefully you don't have to do this, because that's where you start to put coal into your mix. Now New Zealand is clean and green, you don't want that in there. So let's try and displace that with photovoltaics. And it's not because you haven't got sun. I know you have less sun than we have and it rains here, but that's good because it keeps the towns clean. But if you look on a world, see, Freiburg is the solar capital of Europe, and Dunedin's better. You think of Dunedin as your solar capital? So then if you go to look at Nelson, it's nearly as good as Madrid. So, it's your solar resource. If you've been thinking, okay, we're not a sunny country, you're plenty sunny compared to the countries in Europe that have massive PV uptake. Already, PV is cost effective in areas off-grid where you're using diesel. The issue remains that you have to pay 20 years of electricity up front. And that's hard for people, so you have to finance that, and so it's always that issue. However, if you do a life cycle costing, it is already cost effective. In the residential grid market, and this is assuming $5 New Zealand a module, which ends up being about an $8 system, then these are the sorts of curves you get for the different places in New Zealand. And if you assume your electricity goes up at 2% per year, as the government would like you to think, I think when I looked at the stats, you'd actually gone up closer to 6% over the last decade. So you can decide which line you like to follow. But certainly, within a decade or less than a decade, this is looking interesting. This is at $5. Remember the prices I showed you before? So, but in the next 2 years, you're going to have some parts of your country where electricity from PV is cost effective against grid on a long-term cost basis. The commercial market's really important because you get the volumes into the market that drive down cost and get businesses viable because they can sell enough product and so on. But you're competing against lower electricity prices. So, you know, you've got two things happening. And it ends up being that maybe, you know, the cost effectiveness thing happens more or less at the same time as residential, because residential system costs are higher even though their electricity prices are higher. But the commercial sector is also important, because if you think of it, most commercial businesses use power in the middle of the day, whereas in your household you get up in the morning, turn everything on, then you go to work, you come home, you turn everything on, and so you've got a load profile like that, and the sun is doing that while you're not there, right? So in a commercial building or so on, you're very much using power when the sun is there, and this is a very important aspect. In New South Wales, we're spending $17 billion at the moment upgrading our network purely for peak load. And that's the sort of investment that, you know, the idea of smart grids and the idea of using, of managing your load and using resources that provide you power when you need it, we need to be thinking about, because that's $17 billion that could be better invested, could be doing more useful things for the economy. So for New Zealand, capital cost remains an issue, not because it's not cost effective necessarily, but because you have to raise that money, whereas normally, you know, the electricity industry would raise that money and get all of you to pay for it over 50 years, and that's something you don't see, all of that. But you just get an electricity bill every quarter, whereas if you have to pay for that upfront cost, then it's a bigger decision for you. So capital cost is still an issue. I think the awareness and knowledge about PV is probably reasonably low in New Zealand. The schools programs that you have got some of will assist that, but you probably need a lot more visibility of PV in government buildings and a lot more information available and other sort of uses of PV to get people much more familiar with it. You certainly need standard and training. You don't want shoddy PV systems out there. You want modules that are going to be robust that last for 30 years. You don't want to have the public lose confidence in the technology just when you're rolling it out and trying to get an industry going because they've had substandard products or installers who didn't really know what they were doing and didn't do it correctly. Okay. You need to think about your whole planning and building process. A lot of local government people don't know much about PV, so they tend to, if they're worried about something, they'll whack a fee on it, right? And they'll put all sorts of rules in place to make it difficult for you to do this. So try and get in front of that and educate local government about PV. Get them to understand that PV is a solar technology. It needs sun. So you don't want to invest $25,000 this year in a system all over your lovely factory and then have the factory next door put another story, second story on next year and shade your entire building. But at the moment, unless you have solar access legislation and laws out there, then you will lose that fight in the courts. So you need to be thinking about how you, if you're having a subdivision, how you arrange your streets so that everyone has north-facing access and shading is minimised against that north face. You need to know where you're going to plant your trees and how big the trees are going to grow. So the obvious diameters of shading your PV system. All of those things. And then you need to really think carefully about how you're going to do your grid connect arrangements and how you're going to deal with this influx, which you will have, I have no doubt about that, of people wanting to connect PV systems into your grid. And at the moment it's ad hoc. Each electricity company has a different way of dealing with it. Customers have very little knowledge about what their rights are, what they can ask for, how, whether they can negotiate at all on the cost. There's no minimum, there's no guaranteed price of any sort. In most countries, mandating net metering has been the first step they've taken in developing this market and trying to get on top of it. net metering means you get paid the same amount, you're guaranteed to be paid the same amount for the electricity you buy as the electricity you sell. Okay, and that's a standard in many, many parts of the world as the kind of minimum. And if you do the costs of that, it's more or less what it's costing the electricity industry, even though they'll say, oh, you should only pay box supply rate, so they might only offer you 8 cents when you're paying 24 cents. But if you look at the value to them of generation in the middle of the day and of network, less use of the network and so on, mostly the value comes out about right, that a net meter value gives you a fair value for your contribution. And then, of course, the feed-in tariff, where you're being paid even more than that, is a separate political discussion that you need to have. And I won't comment on what you should do there, but I'm sure some of you have your ideas. I just want to mention the International Energy Agency PV program, which deals with the application of PV, everything from large-scale city deployment, that whole city has PV on everything, right through to the off-grid small-scale systems. And it was set up about 15 years ago to try and help with the deployment of PV, reduce costs, improve awareness, all the things that I've just said New Zealand needs to do, okay? And so there's lots of countries involved, and we all work together and share each other's knowledge and prevent duplication of effort. And I think New Zealand could benefit by joining. In Australia, we have our involvement through the Australian PV Association, but the fixed costs are paid by the government. And then people involved in the association, industry members and so on, donate their time to go, but how you do it, it varies from country to country. One of the key things is everyone needs to be involved in this information exchange task. And one of the things it asks you to do is write a PV report with the statistics of PV for your country every single year. You have to actually go and calculate, you know, get the numbers. How much PV is going in? Where is it going in? What are the costs? What are the issues? And write that report every year, and over time you develop this really good view of the industry. And it's much easier then to decide what the appropriate policies are, because at the moment I don't think you here know at all what PV is doing here, how much PV is going in, where it's going, what the costs are. How can you then go to government and say, we need a PV strategy, we need you to do this, this and this, because you haven't got any information to base those kinds of firm policy decisions on. So that's one of the important things. But obviously there's also lots of very other really interesting programs that you get involved in. It's sort of applied research and collaborative, and you work with, you network with other people in the world doing this, and you get over some of those initial hurdles of not knowing too much about it. That's all I wanted to say now. There's lots of references there if you're interested, and I gather the presentation is going up on the ICANN's website in due course. So, I think questions are going to be handled through the panel. Is that right? So I'll just leave it at that.